Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
From the boardroom to the bedroom, welcome to the Doom Room. I'm Alex, and I'm doomed.
What a sexual influence.
What?
Hey, Orlando Bloom, boom, boom, you're in the Boom Doom Room with us. I'm Justin, and I'm doomed.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 1, Episode 10, Hair Patrol.
Oh, boy.
Very exciting. Very excited to talk about this. Now, brief bit of recap if you haven't watched.
What was Hair Patrol?
Yeah. It's a huge coincidence that the title of the episode ties into what happens in the episode. A brief bit of recap here. Niles dates a caveman. All right, now let's talk about the episode.
Yeah.
I'm being a little glib there, but like the large majority of the episode is taken up with getting Niles Calder's backstory with a little bit of a twist at the end there involving Mr. Nobody. And the other half of the episode, we meet the Beard Hunter, who is being sent by the Bureau of Normalcy to go chase down Niles. It is the most disgusting thing that has happened in the history of television. But ultimately, we find out the other side of the story of what happened while Jane and Cliff were in the underground and how Beard Hunter went up against Cyborg and Rita.
Love the Vic and Rita stuff, too.
Yeah.
Real nice.
Now, quick little check-in here, because two episodes ago, I said, this is my favorite episode of Doom Patrol ever. And then last episode, Pete said, this is my favorite episode of Doom Patrol ever. Justin, was this your favorite?
It's okay if it wasn't, man.
No, I guess it has to be. Well, I got to say, like, I just love this show more and more the more we watch it. Like, it is really smartly done and gets into so many unique, funny, original situations all the time. The fact that in this episode we get, like, Niles' motivation for everything, maybe, is to protect his cave bride. And he's willing to sacrifice anything else to do that. Maybe this will end up just being sort of one of many little pocket adventures that Niles has gone on, but the scene at the end between he and Mr. Nobody was great and scary for our Doom Patrol gang.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Justin. And I know we haven't mentioned this in a couple of podcast episodes, but again, I wish somebody had told us to watch the show sooner.
Keep this secret, everybody?
So well done.
We have a whole Patreon Slack, right? Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Tons of people in there. They watch, obviously, a lot of the stuff that we recap on podcasts, but a lot of other shows as well. And literally nobody in that Patreon Slack mentioned Doom Patrol. Not even once.
I remember some people actively discouraging us not to review it and definitely not to do a podcast about it. So it's wild.
You guys are mean.
I also like the way we've learned about the Department of Normalcy.
Yes, and Pete, then we've turned back to actually talking about the show. Go ahead.
Okay, great.
No more scolding necessary. And then we get this twist here, Department of Oddities, and how it was sort of taken over while Niles was away. Again, Niles' fault, Niles being away and being just in love in the Great North, meant a lot of negative changes to the outside world.
Well,
the lesson here is don't be in love ever.
It isn't just Niles.
Stay at work and don't have any relationships.
Well, as Mr. Nobody says later on, I love this line, you've always been a man comfortable with compromise. After all, you fell in love with a Canadian.
Yeah, that was fun line. Very fun line.
Good stuff.
And it's I wondered what happened to that jackrabbit from those home video shows. And it's like, wow, it just got yoked. You know what I mean? Just because you don't see somebody for a couple of years doesn't mean they're doing bad. Like, that jackrabbit got fucking yoked, dude. Holy shit.
I love that. This is a reference I was also going to make of this. The jackalope from America's Funniest. America's Funniest People, the Dave Coulier-led spinoff from America's Funniest Home Videos. Not
rest
oft
in peace,
referenced.
Bob Saget. Rest not, in peace.
Yeah, Bob Saget's not how he wants to be memorialized, I would wager. No one talks about that show, America's Funniest People. Or specifically, the very strange jackalope running sketch.
Oh, I love that thing. Haunted my nightmares for years, that thing.
Was that, I only have the vaguest memory of that, but was that Dave Coulier doing the voice and was like, I'm the jackalope? Something like
that.
It
was fast as fast can be, you'll never catch me.
Yeah.
100%. As soon as I saw the
jackalope.
What a dramatic
reading of that line. I just got to say, I mean, I was moved. I was moved. I don't like to.
I'm a classically trained actor, and I'm not going to do the Dave Coulier helium version of it.
Oh, wow. It's beneath you, huh? Okay. All right.
Wow. Well, we do find a lot about Niles's backstory here, obviously, as he meets this cavewoman who might be named Oyoe, or maybe that's a word she says, or maybe that's the beast. I wasn't 100% sure of the language going on here.
It strikes me as a Pikachu situation.
Gotcha.
Where the Pikachu is sort of like, I'm Pikachu, this is Pikachu.
And the cave is kind of like her Pokeball a little bit.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah.
And he does catch her.
He does catch all of her.
Oh, boy.
If you know what I mean.
Oh, man.
Whatever she is called and whatever the beast is called. Actually, before I get into that, I just want to go back to the thing we're talking about with
back to the title card. Yeah,
what I like to call the DC floop to doop. Nah, that's not exactly right.
DC
know.
Inside look?
Just call it the DC logo. The logo. That's what it's called.
I got a bold idea. Let's not talk about it. We don't need to talk about it.
Here's like one thing I was thinking about between episodes here. I love the fact that Pete is like, you know what I'm really against? Every podcast we do, we have some sort of bit that we do at the beginning. And I'm like, I'm doing the bit. And Justin's like, I'm doing the bit. And Pete's like, nope, absolutely not. Under no circumstances, just saying my name, Pete. And then this podcast, he's like, I'm going to talk for 15 minutes about the DC flip and come up with like different names and shake my shoulders a little bit. That's what I'm into. Then I'm going to talk about the title of the show. I'm going to mention something about the recap for absolutely no reason.
It's like if I started every podcast being like, have you guys checked out Roku City? Like, it's this, I have a lot of problems with the way Godzilla is portrayed in the background of Roku City before I press play on my Roku and then and navigate to the HBO Max app and find Doom Patrol and press play on whatever episode we happen to be talking about.
Wow.
What if I said that every episode?
I think this is great. This is very interesting.
I don't know what you're
I would like
about.
To talk about it more. I
you
love
know what Roku City is. You know what Roku
there's
City
a,
is.
There's a city no idea at the beginning about. Of your Roku?
No, this has been sort of popping up on Twitter.
I am actually interested to know.
Yeah, me too.
This has been popping up on Twitter a little bit. If you have a Roku, like I do, the sort of screensaver it will go to if you don't use it for a while is this scrolling cityscape that has like 50 movie references buried in it. Oh. And it will have a little advertisement that also goes by, but it's got like references to like right now they're Only Murders in the Building. There's some modern ones about shows that are out now, as Handmaid's Tale, as well as like a bunch of older ones to like Titanic. You see Spider-Man, Avengers Towers in the background. So it is this whole thing. And people on Twitter are starting to be like, I live in Roku City. Like, come find me. Who protects Roku City from the criminal underbelly?
Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla's in the background fighting.
Yeah, Godzilla's a good vigilante. He's always seeing people in alleys and stopping crime. Going,
who
Godzilla's
is he?
The best, dude. Don't fucking disrespect Godzilla.
Millionaire Godzilla Wayne. Is he the true Godzilla?
Okay, but seriously, though, at the start of the ep, you see 1913. We see Niles. He looks old. Like, this dude is like, maybe like 200 years old. Like, it is crazy how old this dude is.
Yes, that was one of the things that I wanted to get into here is we talked a lot about how these people are alive for so long. We don't necessarily find out the reason behind every other person on the show, though we've certainly speculated about it before on the podcast. But here for Niles, I think we get the pretty clear reason is whatever is going on with his relationship with this cave woman is the thing that has helped keep him alive. He discovers she's immortal. He discovers there's a lot going on with her. So whatever it is, it seems like she probably shared a bit of that with him over the years that they were hanging out together, is the way I would describe it.
Oh, nice. Beautiful. Okay. That's nice. That's nice,
little,
man.
A little prude like Alex up here.
Well, and just be respectful of their relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. He touches her shoulder, and then that's probably where it ended.
Yeah. I think they go straight to the boneyard.
I did like that gave me a little bit of the old Timothy Dalton, James Bond to that scene, except
yes.
With a cave woman, which was very fun.
Exactly. Well, hello. I like my fish raw and in my mouth.
All right. We'll workshop that pun.
Oh, boy.
Yes, I think so. The immortality thing feels like a big play here. He's trying to, he is immortal. I think he's maybe keeping the Doom Patrol immortal. They have to live mm-hmm. on it until he can solve this problem and get nobody out of the way so that he can actually be back with his girl. I think he is just, it's all a play to live forever in love in a cave in the Yukon Territory, which is such a funny long game. Northern Yukon Territory. Thank you, Pete. Our Canadian cartographer, Pete LePage, dropping the knowledge. It's just funny what a long game he's playing here, because Mr. Nobody is seemingly immortal as well. So he has to be able to defeat him on that timeline.
Well, and also it's clearly important based on the end of the episode, because we find out not only did Mr. Nobody exist, or he exists simultaneously across the timeline, I guess, but he knows he is there back in time. Actually, sorry, I guess that's Niles' memory that he's invading, right? Is what we're supposed to take away from that?
Yes, I think that's what it is.
Okay, but regardless, he doesn't know.
It's kind of like a magic bus situation where he's just kind of going flying around seeing his memories. Mm-hmm.
Always a magic school bus situation.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode, we find out that Mr. Nobody really wants this woman and wants to find this woman. That seems to be the reason he's going after Niles to begin with. Maybe it's because it's just something he doesn't know and he needs to know it. But it seems like Mr. Nobody also has designs on her, whatever that is.
Yeah. Like, you mean like a relationship? Like they're competing? We have like an Archie-Betty... Yeah, Archie, Betty, Veronica situation?
Yeah, I think so. The cave woman is the Archie in the situation, right?
I mean, we think that Mr. Nobody wants the power of the Hulk Jackrabbit, right? That's what the thing is?
I sort of think that Mr. Nobody is also a fan of Dave Coulier's earlier work. and I think that Mr. Nobody is trying to get revenge on Niles. So he wants to get the woman so that he can destroy his happiness.
Okay. So it's not exactly about her power so much as just what she means to Niles.
That's what I think. I mean, Mr. Nobody does seem like he already is immortal, so I don't think he needs the power that she seems to have. And he seemed more powerful than a jackalope that goes to the gym a lot. So I don't know if he needs that particular thing.
Yeah, and I'll clarify, I have seen the episodes, I don't honestly remember, so it could go either way there. I'm not tipping my hand or anything like that.
Okay, great.
But I did really, to get a little more into this whole flashback sequence for Niles, I did really like it, and I liked how this relationship developed. I liked how bad it got, because I feel like with these things, sometimes somebody gets hurt, and they're like, ooh, my leg hurts a little bit. And that's it. But it just got worse and worse and worse for Niles, to the point where it made sense that he couldn't leave this cave and that ultimately he didn't want to leave this cave.
Yeah. Horcon, man. Watch out.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
That means the ice is cracking. And I love this. You spend a lot of time up in the woods and you know exactly where the ice is going to break.
Yeah. And then you're standing just on the other side of it, which would probably just be safe, right?
100%. I also like the fact that Niles improved their clothes. I thought that was pretty cool. Like, she was wearing like a kind of a raggedy pelt, and then he got something that had some very nice sewing and had like a nice lining.
Really impressive. Yeah,
he was in the department of seamstering mm-hmm. for quite some time.
Well, he did put that patch on his little kind of briefcase there, so yeah. He's got some sewing skills.
It's a great skill. And I like the way that the Alistair, the hunter guy, we get our own personal The Gray situation at the top of the episode. And then later on, Alistair comes back and Niles kills him to protect his secret, setting up that he will do anything, even sacrificing his superhero team. to protect that secret. His box of bargain bin action figures, I think, is what Mr. Nobody calls them.
Yeah. Good stuff. That was heartbreaking, man.
Let's move over to the other half of the episode then and talk about Beard Hunter, who we meet here in 2019. Like I mentioned up top, this is so gross and so purposely gross, but not just seeing him eat the hair, but the close-ups of his mouth being like, just
it was like he was so gross, like from the minute we saw him in the grocery store, like just the way he was pushing the cart around, like he was just like, he walks up to this old dude and like knew that he was looking for peaches and was in aisle five, and it was really creepy. He got real close to him. I was like, yes. I don't know what this guy's deal is, but man, he freaks me out.
He's got a cocky attitude. Yeah. I'll tell you that much. And I don't like it.
I had a question for you, Pete, off the beginning of this storyline. So after we meet Beer Hunter and hear him yelling at his mom and everything, and finally he gets the assignment from the Bureau of Normalcy to go after Niles, he calls up to his mom, and it turns out that she put his shuriken in the laundry, and he says, shuriken are hand wash only.
Hand wash only, yeah.
You are our
the dishwasher.
In the dishwasher. Yeah. And they're
hand wash only.
Pete, you're our weapons expert on the podcast. Is that correct?
Sure. Yes. I mean, a lot, unfortunately, you know, a lot of dishwashers now are so powerful. You know, like if you have something that's like hand painted on the shuriken or any kind of labeling hand that painted. You might have on it could get washed away. It's not obviously going to damage metal, but just for the, you know, you want to hand wash.
Could dull the blade. Let me ask you, Pete, who paints your shurikens? Do you go with like a beach scene?
No, I'm just saying sometimes they come with designs and art on them, or if you want to keep track of them, you know, label them that way. If you could,
like a Bob Ross landscape on your shuriken.
Yeah, definitely. You know,
relax the people that you're trying to murder with a throwing star.
I can't remember at this point. You own nunchucks, or you've always wanted to own nunchucks?
Wait, are you serious right now?
Yeah. Either way, an achievable life goal.
I chuck. Of course, I got practice chucks. I got other kinds of chucks. Yeah. What the question is here, but the...
How do you wash those is my question.
The chucks?
Yeah, chucks, you got to carefully. I mean, because the depending on what the, you know, if it's chain, you got to, basically it's cloth. You got to get in there and, you know, kind of clean it well.
Some wood treatment. Let me ask you, Pete, what was it like to see yourself portrayed on screen as a fellow chucker? And you, I guess, are a beard hunter in your own way.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, I wish I was a nicer character, but hey, you got to take what you get, I guess, you know?
That's nice. I mean, I thought this whole thing,
I loved every weapon that he had. And I was like, yeah, I would definitely do that. Yeah, I would definitely. I mean, what's great is you see that on his, he's not only got two samurai swords across like a Deadpool type situation, although sometimes Deadpool has them straight. So never mind. But
it's like Casey Jones.
Like kind of a Casey Jones. But like the throwing star is right here. Smart. Just like you're able to kind of then go like this.
Unless you turn your head fast, and then you got a throwing star on your neck.
Well,
if you're turning to yell, "Fuck, this is us."
No, but this is the handles here. The blades are inside the, you know, so you can turn around. You know, you got that range of motion.
Wow, that was the most thorough breakdown I've ever heard Pete LePage do on anything. And I tell you what, I love it.
One thing that I loved is Beard Hunter actually being a threat for the Doom Patrol, because I feel like it would have been an easy joke to make him a slob
a loser
who doesn't know what he's doing, a total loser. But particularly the fight with Cyborg was so cool to watch.
Yeah. Funny.
Very funny, but also a good action sequence at the same time, and that's not an easy balance to strike.
Yeah.
I did
like the This Is Us shout out. I thought that was fun that the mom couldn't be bothered because she's
takedown.
Shout out, not takedown.
He said, fuck, this is us.
Because he didn't want to have to go to the market. But I don't think he meant that, at This Is Us, you know what I mean? Because it's a quality show.
Okay. You love This Is Us.
Nunchucks and This Is Us. You contain multitudes, Pete.
Oh, thanks, man.
What I was going to say is this show does such a great job of making the choice that you don't expect and makes for such a much better final product. Like having Beard Hunter be actually quite powerful, able to take over Cyborg's operating system, right?
Yeah.
Is that what we're saying? Like because he was compromised? Mm-hmm. Or anticipating that that would happen mm-hmm. based on knowing what he knew by inhaling a very tiny pube.
Pube is not, it's beard hair. That's not pubic hair. It's different.
It's a type of pubic hair.
Yeah. Pubes are the beard of the crotch.
Oh my God. Yeah. I really, as soon as you started that sentence, I was like, this is going to be awful.
Man, somebody call up Manscaped. We got a new slogan over here.
I think, and this is just my interpretation of it, but I think the implication of what's going on with Cyborg is that Grid, his operating system, is starting to take control. This is something we know from the comics. This happens a lot. Grid either takes control, becomes a separate organism.
I think
organism,
Mr. Nobody... Like messed with him when he was in there. I think that's, you know,
interesting. Was it Mr. I think Nobody? It's his dad.
Yeah. It could be Mr. Nobody. It could be his dad. It could just be as simple as his operating system was freed and is doing the classic robot AI thing of just growing too large and taking too much control. But right. I don't think, like you said, Justin, I don't think it was Beard Hunter taking control of him. It was knowing more about what's going on with Cyborg than Cyborg knows about what's going on with himself.
Right. Well, and a Beard Hunter did compromise Cyborg in his way. So I think that is what prompted Grid to have to get into the full protective mode. So I do think Beard Hunter knew what he was doing. And even when the hand cannon was pointed at him, he was not giving a shit about what was happening. He knew. Giving off big Jim Carrey the mask energy as he ran up the steps, cackling like a maniac. So I hope we see more of Beard Hunter.
It was interesting, though, that Vic knew, like, right away, like, wait, did you eat drain scum? Like, it would have took me a while to figure out, like, wait, what did you do? How did you get a beard hair? Like, so I guess it was smarter just to kind of just name it and move on instead of having this be like, well, I'm not following. What is your power? How did you do this?
Well, let me ask a quick question here in terms of his future on the show, Justin. At the end of the episode, we see him going down this very weird staircase and finding a, what would you call it, paper mache version of the chief talking to him.
Yeah. A button doll version where she's then, got button eyes.
Ugh. And he, very Coraline, he screams and that's where we leave him. What do you think is going to happen to Beer Hunter? What's your theory there?
I don't think he's gone yet. He didn't get to say any of his secrets. I would be surprised if the whole character was just brought to be a sacrifice to the Jackalope.
At the end. I think the Jackalope grabbed him and is going to start a home video review show with him.
Beard Hunter would be helpful. He would know where the funniest videos in America are, or the funniest people. Well, I mean, I thought it was interesting, like, that Niles is a doll of Niles. Our first thought was is maybe Mr. Nobody. But the fact that the Jackalope was there is maybe not Mr. Nobody.
Yeah.
Because the Mr. Nobody hunts is looking for the Jackalope.
Mm-hmm. Unless this is, it's possible, again, I really don't remember, maybe this is telling the story out of order. Like, maybe the Mr. Nobody Niles scenes are well before this or something. I don't know.
Right,
I think it's the Hulk, Jackrabbit is made an evil doll of Niles. And, you know, it lives at the bottom of the stairs. And, you know, if you go to the bottom of the stairs, the doll's going to fuck with you.
This is why I never go to the bottom of the stairs.
Never go.
I feel weird because I'm in a basement right now. Oh, I am at the bottom of this.
You are?
Doll's going to fuck with you.
With my own personal jackalope.
Oh, man.
What else do we want to call out about this episode? We didn't really talk about Rita too much necessarily. I love the line from her where she suggests teaming up with Beard Hunter. And she says, maybe we can co-star with him. And Cyborg says, you mean team up? And she says, yes, that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a little upset at Rita in the beginning because she was like, you know, calling the light being a thing. And I was just kind of like, come on, Rita. Like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like, we're a group of misfits. Like, don't call one thing a person a thing. And, you know, I thought she was better than that. I thought she had grown. I thought she had kind of, you know.
Well, this isn't really a big episode for Rita necessarily emotionally. She's mostly there as comic relief and also to offer off the information. Cyborg pulls out the comic book that they got from Danny on the street. The new show.
Danny on the street.
Billy Eichner. I'd watch that.
I'd watch that too. A street goes around and asks people questions on the street.
It turns awesome. The tables. Great. It turns yeah. the tables.
Yeah. I ask questions on you now. In Russia, street asks questions on you. No, you see the comic book, and Rita points out that the cartoon hunk is the gone hunk is from missing. The ad.
And did we see there's the name Mentallo mm-hmm. is on there, a reference to the comic book Flex Mentallo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So that should potentially be coming up, which is very fun for fans of the comic books.
That's a big spot. I've seen this twice and I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's very exciting, as is the crying dogs in the background there. That's also pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Any other moments that you wanted to call out in particular, Pete?
Let me just kind of page through here. The ice payback. It's upsetting to like think that, you know, our group of people like Niles, and Niles is taking care of them and trying to make their lives better. But it's like, the more we find out about Niles, the shittier he gets. And like, we've seen numerous examples of Niles being cold as ice. And when he is just like, you know, killed some people to keep his secrets and then flat out said, I don't care what you do to them. I was heartbroken. I was just like, you know, well, it makes me think they're going to be better off without the chief, and they had to walk away clean, you know?
Yeah, they're walking a really interesting line with Niles, I think, in terms of how he does things. If you look at his relationship with the woman, I think there's an argument to be made he's doing it for what's best for the world and keeping her secrets away from the Bureau of Normalcy. But there's probably a bigger argument to be made for he wants her to be his secret and his secret alone in a very selfish way. And I think that gets to what you're saying, Pete, about the Doom Patrol and his relationship to them as well, that he's coming up with these reasons for why he's doing things, but they're very gaslighty in terms of what he's telling everybody. And maybe he's doing the right things, but often for very much the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And I would also throw out there, like, he may be trying to play Mr. Nobody as well to distract him from his true ultimate goal. If he's just, because he knows how Mr. Nobody's powers works, if he's having these memories as a distraction to put Nobody on that track, trying to protect some other track, or like he has many layers like a banana.
Famously many layers.
Yeah. That's a line from, I think Mr. Nobody says that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very funny.
So I do think that, he may be playing him this whole time.
Hmm. Interesting. Any other moments you guys want to call out? Pete, you done looking through your notes or?
There's this much talk about a magic school bus, you know, and I really want their little bus to be able to fly at some point, because it just seems like it would be, they're really setting it up. Like,
who do you think is the Miss Frizzle? I'm going to go with the negative spirit.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Nice. I was going to say one of the personalities of Jane has to be close to a Miss Frizzle.
There was a Frizzle in there last episode, I think.
Yeah.
Driver 8 is kind of a Miss Frizzle, but a very uninterested Miss Frizzle, I would say.
Yeah. Which is not a Frizzle. Frizzle's always interested.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. Yeah.
Well, I feel like the network gave that same note. It was like, hey, can we make this bus that they ride a magic school bus? That's what the network's always trying to cram in that kind
of thing. I don't want to spoil anything for upcoming seasons, but very slowly the main characters leave and are replaced by school children, and they mostly explore the circulatory system.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, every show inevitably goes Frizzle at some point. It's happened with all of our favorite jumping the shark
and there's going Frizzle. That's basically
it. It's like they always say, you got to go Frizzle if you want to stay in the Bizzle.
Wow. All right, Snoop Dogg.
Yep.
That is true.
Why don't we move to our final section here and talk about who was most doomed in the episode. Justin, Who's most doomed in the episode, would you say?
First thought, I would say whoever the guys were that were frozen in the cave. Like, who are those dudes? Like, those bodies are not good. And while we're talking about it, I really appreciate that Niles eats the fish raw. Because when you cook fish in a space, it really smells up the joint. Mm-hmm. So you want to do that sparingly here.
The whole cave smells like fish for weeks after
that. You don't want
the
that.
The ventilation in the cave is not good.
Especially when you're trying to hook up in the kitchen, essentially. You don't want to hook up with like an old, week-old trout stench flying around there. So just really great writing there. But I also want to say I think Cyborg is the tension and the sort of underlying stress is only growing about what's going on with him in his life.
Pete, what about you? Who's most doomed this episode?
I would say it was Niles. You know, they say in television you don't see people use the bathroom. And when Niles was taking a shit, you knew it was like, oh, this guy's in trouble. So I would say I don't care as much for Niles after this episode as before, and it's a little heartbreaking. So, you know, I hope he's doomed.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to throw it out to Beard Hunter as most doomed. He seems in pretty dire straits at the end there, whether you're talking about paper mache, button eye, puppet, Niles, or yoked jackalope. He doesn't have a lot of places he can go right now, so I guess we'll see what happens with him.
And off that, do you think we're going to get, since we've gotten Jackalope, are we going to get Woody the Woodchuck, another Dave Coulier character from Fuller?
That guy was
voicing a lot of woodland creatures.
You have now gone beyond my very vague knowledge of America's Funniest People.
This was in Full House.
It was in Full House. Sort of
in continuity.
Now, that sure sucked.
The continuity.
Oh, wow, dude. That's a hot take.
And the famous catchphrase of Woody the Woodchuck was, is that made of wood?
He did the hat thing.
I love how, Pete, you know all about this. And
I'm completely lost right now. Completely.
This is a pop culture gap from a 100%. Man. Is Alvin usually in the know? Mm-hmm. How many? I feel like on a hand we could count how many things Pete and I have been deep in on, and Alex has not.
It's seriously anything TGIF because I.
Oh my god!
First of all, too busy on Friday nights in the 90s.
No. Yes, I was out clubbing. That sounded real, right? When I said it.
It sounds like you were clubbing seals.
Probably. No, I never watched those shows because I didn't like them at all. I didn't think they were funny. Like, I was vaguely aware of them existing, but I had no interest in watching them.
You're such a comedy snob. Mm-hmm.
I guess Pete, hearing that news makes Pete and I so happy that we'll do the Dance of Joy.
Oh, that nice. I know. Wait, was Perfect Strangers TGIF?
Of course it was.
Oh, I did watch that. I did watch that.
Oh, okay.
What are you even talking about?
I watched the quality shows. I didn't watch Full House. I watched Perfect Strangers, a good show.
Oh, my God.
Man, you draw weird lines.
Me and Larry Appleton, we're the same, you know? If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to crowdcast in YouTube. Please come out. We'd love to chat with you about TGIF and other TV shows. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. And now, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Never use the first stall in the public bathroom.
Ha ha ha.